On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we try our best to recap a ridiculous weekend of World Baseball Classic action. We begin with the state of Team USA. They are undefeated, but it has been a little weird so far. We talk about Bryce Harper and Aaron Judge's budding bromance that has maybe already been in progress for years. We talk about Tarek Skubal. Is he going to pitch again? We'll see. We head over to Tokyo, check in on Japan, who has already advanced to the quarterfinals, as well as Korea. And then, of course, we talk about the drama at the pools in Miami and in San Juan, a couple walk-off homers, so many more emotional moments to get to. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world brave enough to admit that it's overwhelmed by all the WBC action. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And this is unbelievable. I cannot believe how much baseball there is, how entertaining the baseball is, and how am I supposed to watch all of it?
We're doing our best. We're trying to figure out which Fox Sports channels these games are on and what time zones they're going to start. But what a weekend of ball, my friend. And we got a lot to get to, so let's not wait any longer. Let's get to our opener.
We could start in a bazillion different places, but we're going to start in America, in Houston, and begin with Pool B. That is the pool with Team USA, Brazil, Mexico, Great Britain, and Italy. As things stand for Team USA, they are 2-0. Italy is 2-0, and Mexico is 2-0. Those three biggest dogs have yet to play one another. Both Great Britain and Brazil have been eliminated. And so this is a really good kind of breath that we can take as we move forward with this pool. And from where we go from here, it's pretty simple, right? If you go 2-0 over your last two games, you win the pool. If you go 0-2, you're eliminated. And if everyone goes 1-1, well, then we have to do some math.
And we certainly will get to some of that math later when we discuss the dramatic conclusion of Pool C in the Tokyo Dome, which happened just minutes before we started recording on this Monday morning. We are going to start in Pool B, though, because there's some Team USA stuff we want to talk about. Let's be honest. This has been by far the least competitive pool so far. Now, a lot of that is because we haven't had the good games yet, but every other pool has given us some just incredible, from in terms of just leverage, in terms of just like on the edge of your seat, who's going to win this game. Every other pool has given us a game. This pool has given us a couple interesting innings with Team USA, which we can talk about. But the final scores of pretty much all of these games have not been particular. I guess Great Britain versus Italy was the closest we got to a compelling
ending. Great
Britain
versus Mexico had some sauce until late before Jonathan Aranda
very early on
broke that open.
Yeah. Yes, but for the most part, the final scores ended up roughly where we expected. And again, the teams have generally taken care of business, right? We have Italy is at 2-0. We have Mexico 2-0, U.S. at 2-0. There were a little you know, vignettes in each of these games that I will certainly remember, right? Certainly in the Brazil game, we have Lucas Ramirez hitting two home runs. We have Joseph Contreras, the 17-year-old, getting judged to ground into a double play in the Great Britain U.S. game.
Let me hop on Joseph Contreras for a second.
In another podcast, we would spend a lot more time on this.
It is not that Joseph Contreras, a high school student, the son of Jose Contreras, a commit to Vanderbilt University and a very legitimate pro prospect. It is not that Joseph Contreras got Aaron Judge out. It is not even that he got Aaron Judge to ground into a double play. It is that he broke Aaron Judge's bat. As a pitcher, the act of, you know, being so dominant that you ruined your opponent's equipment is as good as it gets. In the men's league world, it is a very costly thing to do to someone else when you break their bat because they have to go to, like, you know, Modell's or whatever and get a new lumber. But for Contreras to turn Aaron Judge's, I believe he swings Chandler, into firewood is something that I will remember for forever. I mean, it was amazing, and kudos to Judge for after the game being like, yeah, that was really cool for that kid.
Let's just kind of wrap up the non-USA things that we're thinking about right now. Mexico, of course, early against Great Britain was kind of, it was close, and then they cruised, and then they absolutely dominated, run ruling Brazil, 16-0 in six innings, hit a bunch of homers. We had Alec Thomas going yard, Kirk's going yard. And then Italy is the other team that has generally taken care of business. Quite the contrast, them beating Brazil 8-0 after the U.S. struggled against them for the first few innings. And I think the thing about Italy that stands out, the pitching has generally shown up, but the young hitters that they've put together around our pal Vinny Pasquantino have shown up in a way. You're getting a two-homer game from Dante Nori, who was a first-round pick, but he was not necessarily someone I was expecting a ton of in this tournament, right? Andrew Philly's Fisher, another prospect. First-round pick, but a little bit older, right? Dante Nori, Phillies prospect. His dad, who's an NBA assistant coach, Mike Nori, was in the stands for those games, which was very cool. We have Jacob Marcy at the top of the lineup. I know Cags hasn't really done anything, but Sam Antonacci's making anything. Stuff happen. Vinny hasn't done anything, right? So
yeah.
These younger guys are really showing up.
Vinny's just in the corner pulling shots and popping out the shortstop. Again, it's just two games, and like, I'm not worried about it. But Vinny does deserve credit for the energy around Italy. It's just absolutely sensational. The espresso machine in the corner is getting a lot of the pub, but we texted Vinny last night because there was a shot of them like putting the jacket on the player. Mm-hmm. And we're so used to the jackets being these like ostentatious, multicolored, sparkly things with, you know, the Blue Jays have the one with all the flags, and now the Dominican has the one with all the names and the Dominican colors. But the one in Italy's dugout was just like a regular blue blazer. And I was like, that's weird. Turns out Team Italy is being sponsored by Armani. So they just have like an Armani, like a nice Armani jacket.
Great work.
They're just great putting work on guys when they over. Ugh.
Yeah, it's so Italy's off to a nice start there. I think that I do have one more point about Brazil and Great Britain, but anything else on Mexico or Italy before we turn our focus back to Team USA?
I don't feel like I've learned a whole lot about the Mexican team so far. They did a good job kicking the crap out of Brazil in a way that the other teams really didn't. I do feel better about Italy now than I did when the tournament started, because their pitching depth has shown up. And like you said, they're getting offense from the guys I didn't expect them to get offense from.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it. I'm seeing that they're starting Manny Barreda against Team USA tonight, who's a 37-year-old with a very small amount of major league time. That is strange a little bit, but maybe they are solely focused on the game against Team Italy.
Punt. For the teams playing Team USA, if you go down early, just punt it. Now, is it cool to beat USA? Yes, but let's be real. If you only need one win, you're probably more likely to get that win if you're Italy against Mexico and Mexico against Italy.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're planning on just full bullpenning it, and maybe they have a bulk guy coming in after. I don't know. That's a little bit strange. I will say, though, you mentioned, you know, Mexico beating up on Brazil like the other team. I mean, Italy beat up on Brazil. And it is remarkable that Brazil, who scored 5 runs against Team USA, has not scored against Italy or Mexico. And that brings us to today's game, which by the time you're listening to this, you probably are aware of the result or whatever, which is Brazil versus Great Britain, both teams that are 0-3. And that does matter, because the winner of that game will qualify for the next World Baseball Classic. The other one will have to requalify, because if you finish last in your pool, you have to requalify. So there are big stakes in that one. And I bring that up because it sounds like there's a good chance we could see Joseph Contreras pitching again in that one. For how many innings, who knows? But that could be compelling. And Great Britain, like, I don't know, man. Like, they've played way better than their 0-3 record. And it's gotten away from them really ugly late. But they've really put together some interesting innings. They've had some big pitching performances. What Najer Victor did was incredible. So, you know, credit to them on all that. But that I mean, is, they were I think beating, that's enough on the rest of Yeah, they were beating,
this is the pivot here. They were beating Team USA in the fifth inning, 1-0, until Yvonne Johnson kind of had a little, you know, oopsie daisy throw, and that's all it takes when you're playing Team USA. You give them an inch, they'll take a kilometer, and with the talent on that lineup, it wasn't even close. The highlights for USA from the games they've played, I think the Schwarber homer was probably the most cathartic moment. Going upper decky off of Andre Scrub of Great Britain. That was like the first moment in this WBC that like got me excited for the regular season in a very tangible way, just because like a Kyle Schwarber moon tickling home run, like that was just so classically him. So that I very much enjoyed. I would say though that Team USA, a lot of the narratives floating around them are less about the results they've had so far and more just like capital D discourse. And I think that the place to begin there is Tarek Skubal. So Tarek Skubal, the two-time reigning Cy Young Award winner in the American League, is a free agent at the end of this season. And unless he gets space jammed or his elbow goes kablooey, he will probably break the record for the largest free agent contract ever earned by a starting pitcher. His agent, Scott Boras, is the most polarizing and important agent in the sport. And it is interesting to begin with that Skubal is even here pitching in the WBC at a time where every time he picks up a baseball, it is a financial swing of a small Caribbean nation. GDP. Like, it is a big freaking deal. So Skubal goes out there against Great Britain, gives up a leadoff bomb to Nate Eaton, settles in, and dominates from then on. In the dugout after his start, Ken Rosenthal, Fox Sports and The Athletic, asks Mr. Skubal if there's any chance that he'll pitch again. We had been told beforehand by multiple outlets that Skubal would only make one start. I believe Skubal said as much. But when Ken asked Tarek, "You playing again? You done?" he did not say no. Tarek said that he was not ready to make that decision. He did not give a firm answer. The camera then cut back to Tarek and Ken, where it seemed like they were maybe having some words between one another. And now we're in a position where Skubal seems to have had Scott Boras talk to the Tigers about potentially making another start for Team USA. Jordan, there's a lot to parse through here. But where does your brain go when we talk about, you know, Skubal Gate?
Yeah, I mean, I made my thoughts known last time because he was already taking so much heat for coming out and saying, "I'm only doing this once." Everyone's like, "Oh, what a joke. You're just going to pitch against Great Britain and then leave." Well, he pitched against Great Britain. He left the game losing and was probably feeling like he didn't do enough at the time of that interview. USA was losing the game, right? And he had allowed this home run to Nate Eaton. And I'm sure Tarek Skubal was like, "That was not good enough for me. I am embarrassed. I want to do more." And then, of course, he gives these quotes afterwards being like, "This has been really emotional for me. Like this, I didn't even realize how emotional it was going to be for me once I was out there." And you mentioned the whatever conversations are going to be going on behind the scenes. And that is an interesting thing. It's a reminder that this is his decision. This is not the Tigers' decision. The Tigers can beg and plead him all they want, but they cannot stop him from pitching generally, right? Like, obviously, we've heard these conversations about, "Oh, this guy's on a restriction because his team." And yes, those are all kind of true. But the reality is this is Tarek Skubal's decision. And that is the thing I think we have to all reckon with and realize that this is something that he is going to decide one way or the other. And at this point, I would still be pretty shocked if he ends up pitching again. But I don't know. Maybe he is this compelled and he's viewing, he starts taking in the mindset that every other player, a lot of the other players said, like, "Yeah, I could get hurt going pitching in spring training," which is true. I think that there is something to the pitches that he's likely to be throwing, particularly if he does come back for the knockout stage from a stress and intensity level is certainly different than what he would be doing in the Grapefruit League. But I don't know. Again, I do not expect to see him again, but I think it's really just really hitting home that this was a tough thing for him to begin with. And now I think, you know, it's an interesting thing to monitor for better or for worse, even if this all still ends up being nothing.
He has a right to change his mind. And I think, I'm sorry I'm not providing a spicier take here, but the way I feel about this is that there's actually no bad decision. I'm sure Tarek Skubal is conflicted between these two choices, but I think both are completely defensible. If the money that's in front of him is so large that I can I don't think it's greedy for him to prioritize that. It is reasonable. It is rational. And in the same way, if he feels the pull of the WBC enough to pitch in it, that is also reasonable and rational. And so no matter what he ends up deciding, I don't think he deserves scorn. I think that his teammates clearly understand that him being there at all in the first place is significant, that he is making a sacrifice here. And so it's not as if he's going to lose respect inside that clubhouse. Not that he's worried about that. So for all of the hubbub about this, I do think it is generally like not there's no controversy here.
Yeah. I mean, it's surprising because I think if he throws three scoreless and he left the game when they were up by 10 and it kind of felt like more of a spring training start, for lack of a better purpose, he might have been able to be like, you know what? That was cool. I'm going somewhere else. But
you're right. Like in the dugout, and when he's talking to Rosenthal, you can tell that he's been affected and like impacted by what had just occurred on the field. You're totally right. If US had had the offensive explosion in the second inning, I don't even think we're having this conversation. It was just the energy that he brought to that. And he said as much. He's like, I need to sleep on this. I'm not prepared to make this decision right now. And that's part of why I, like you, lean towards him not pitching again in the WBC. We will see how this goes. I think I probably need to go watch his next spring training start that I'm down here, right? Like, that'll be fascinating. Sure,
yeah, because again, so the final would be a week from tomorrow, a week from Tuesday. The semi would be either Sunday or Monday, but I'm pretty sure it would be
Monday.
It's
not worth counting the days. The upshot is possible. He can do it if he wants to. Is it the optimal buildup to opening day? No. Could he make it happen? Sure. I don't even think that's worth litigating. What I do want to talk about, Jordan, is Bryce Harper saying that the Olympics matter more than the WBC versus guys from other countries saying that the WBC matters more than the World Series. There's a lot to pick through. Let's begin with Harper and the Olympics. Now, Bryce has had this Olympics fetish, love, obsession his whole career. This is not new. He loves the Olympics, right? And I think there is an element of truth in what he said, that the Olympics do matter more, right? They have more cultural cachet in the States and around the world. And more people will probably tune in than otherwise would. However, maybe don't knock the tournament you're playing in while you're playing in it. Just because it's true doesn't mean it needs to be said in this way.
That was my biggest takeaway, because I think there is an interesting conversation to be had about how players view the WBC in general versus the World Series, and we could get to that if you want. But the phrasing here was so important. If Bryce Harper is asked this question and he answers it by saying, man, the WBC is awesome, imagine what it would be like for the Olympics. If you say it like that, if it's just like, this is awesome, that would also be awesome. I don't think it comes okay. He's like, but instead, by saying it's not the Olympics, you're basically downplaying and being like, well, this isn't that great. And whether that was his intention or not, I do think that that phrasing is crucial in how this whole story kind of ballooned and why this clip kind of carried off to the way that it did. However, whether or not MLB pauses for the Olympics is an enormous question that will hang over baseball basically as soon. Well, by the way, based on the reporting, it's possible that this could be something that is being discussed during the CBA negotiations as well.
Sure.
Now, I would like to say,
here's the thing though about the Olympics, man. If big league players participate in the 2028 Olympics, That will be a one-off. Okay? That will not be something that happens every 4 years in the Olympic cycle. Because the league is not pausing for 2 weeks for everyone to fly to Brisbane, Australia in 2032.
Right?
They're not playing baseball inevitably when Saudi Arabia hosts in 2036. Okay? 2028 is a one-off. And I think that that is both cool and worth doing, but it will, it does, it, because of that, like the WBC has this triannual consistency to it that will heighten the importance of it. And so while I do believe and I understand that Bryce Harper wants to walk out there holding the flag at the Olympics in 2028, I think that will probably be more of a gimmick than the WBC will. Not to say it won't mean something to everybody, but it's not going to be, we're not going to have big leaguers playing in the Olympics every single time. It's just not happening.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And also, we have already kind of hit on this. It's only going to be six teams. As we've mentioned, one of, or multiple of, you know, Venezuela, Mexico, DR, Puerto Rico are not going to be in the Olympics because of how they're limiting the qualification. But the point that I keep, like when I read about, oh, maybe could this come up in CBA negotiations? Yeah, I can understand if you're Bryce Harper and you're Aaron Judge and you, and although is Bryce Harper definitely going to be the best first baseman in America in 2 years? You know, that's an interesting conversation. But the point is that is going to impact such a small percentage of players that it feels weird to me that like the players would be like, hell yeah, let's pause the season so that, you know, the best player on my team maybe can go play in the Olympics for a couple of weeks. Like it is, I don't blame Bryce Harper for having that vision and thing and wanting to play in it. And yes, he is right in a very basic sense that the Olympics, the Olympic level of fame is absolutely so far ahead of anything we can even really comprehend in baseball that's not Shohei Ohtani, that is a true thing. Yeah. And so I can see wanting to crave that. And I like the idea of baseball being in the Olympics and there being some of the best players there. So I hope that that happens in some, to some degree. But in general, I think this was the wrong framing and just the wrong way to phrase it.
You're right, though. Like, speed skaters become household names for 2 weeks every 4 years. Like, that is preposterous and way beyond what the WBC is. The one other thing I do want to talk about with this is Kike Hernandez, I think, had a quote about it. He is not on a team right now because he's recovering from surgery. And so he just flew down to Puerto Rico to be in the dugout. They signed. Oh, they did sign him.
Yeah, he's back. He's back, but he's not playing because he is rehabbing.
He is rehabbing. Sorry,
he's back in the Dodgers.
I literally did not know. I literally just missed that. Kike is in the dugout with Puerto Rico, and he was talking about the World Series, and he was like, "This is more important to me than the World Series." Now it's easy to like laugh at Kike for that because it's like, well, you get to go to the World Series every year, and like you've done this, so whatever. But then like Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez have had similar quotes where, you know, they have said that playing for DR is above the playoffs. And I keep thinking about this in the context of the U.S. team, where the American team, it feels like they're doing a job, right? It's very clinical. It's very serious. Mm-hmm. It is less overtly and obviously joyful than some of these other teams. Now, some of that is just cultural differences, but I think some of it speaks to a legitimate difference in how the U.S. team functions versus how all the other teams in this competition function. Because I think if you truth serumed everybody on the USA team and you said, what's more important, WBC or World Series, that ratio would be way different than every other team in the tournament, right? Now, part of that is because America having MLB in it, with all due respect to the Blue Jays, having MLB in it means that American culture, American players are the dominant cultural force in the sport. And so when you go into any clubhouse of the 26 guys on the team, 15 to 20 are American. Most of the coaches are American. Most of the front office staff and support staff is American. And so when all of these American players go to Team USA, they're not stepping into this new cultural world. They're just stepping into an all-star team. And that's not to say that the experience isn't important or meaningful or moving the needle for them. it just is not separate culturally, energy-wise, than what they're doing every day. For the 19 other teams in this tournament, it is a completely different story. Because while you may have another Dominican in your locker room or even another Panamanian or Venezuelan, to be in a room of 26 other guys where everyone is speaking your language and eating your food and wearing your flag, it raises the meaning and the importance up a level that the U.S., in my opinion, will simply never be able to match. I don't think that, you know, I saw some people be like, there is no American culture. Like, I don't think that that is, I mean, I don't want to have that conversation. I think that within the context of baseball, that is somewhat true. The dominant cultural force in the sport is American. And so when everybody else gets to be around their countrymen, it is this unique, different, refreshing experience for them that leads to the party atmosphere we see whenever the Dominican hits a home run. So I know that was a long, you know, soapboxy rant, but it's just, I'm trying to piece that together. Like, why does the U.S. look like it's having less fun, you know? And I think that is why.
They also talk about it as if it's a job. They literally say, we got a job to do, you know? And they...
Could you imagine Juan Soto? Yeah. Like there's no world in which Tatis is at the podium. He's like, this is business. This is a business trip. This is not, the Dominican does not feel like they're on a business trip.
No, they are. I mean, they are also understand the opportunity that they have because their team is so good. Sure. And I think that that's part of what the U.S. is dealing with too, because they recognize like, oh, we should win. Like, we have to do this because look at our team. This is a joke. And I think that I'm sure Japan feels that way too, to some degree. And DR feels that way too, to some degree. But it's the messaging. It's the messaging, and it is literally what they look like when they are playing. And I think that the last Team USA thing that I want to think about that is kind of related to this, which is, well, then what do we get out of seeing all these players on the same team over the course of a couple of weeks? You start to learn about some of the relationships between players that are not actually teammates that are a little bit more compelling than you realized. And I think the best example of that so far for Team USA has been Bryce Harper and Aaron Judge. This was something that I don't think was really on anybody's radar at any point in any sort of meaningful way. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, as someone who's, of course, covered both of these guys up close a lot over the last few years, so you can certainly speak on this. But this first really started to come to the surface on the first workout day, where Aaron Judge was on Pat McAfee, and he was asked a really good question, actually, by one of Pat McAfee's co-hosts, whose name I don't know because I don't watch that show. And the question was basically, what are you thinking when you're on deck? Like, or what are you like, which, or what is the mentality in the box? But the way it was phrased, I thought it was a really good question. And Judge basically talks about how it starts on deck. And that's when it really, the gears kind of start spinning and how it goes. And he goes out of his way to reference a conversation he had with Bryce Harper before last postseason, where Bryce Harper told him, like, his advice having been in these moments, not that Aaron Judge has never been in the postseason, so the timing of this is kind of strange, but he said, you know, own the moment, don't let the moment own you. And Judge references that as like this text that he got from Bryce, and he was like, man, like that's exactly what I need to do. And of course, Judge goes on to have this awesome postseason and so on and so forth. Then we get this additional reporting where go ahead.
I said Bryce doesn't have a good postseason.
Bryce doesn't. Bryce did not own the moment. But Aaron Judge owned the moment. He has whatever, 5 multi-hit games and hits that big homer.
The moment owned friend of the program, Orion Kirkering.
Well, right. Exactly. But anyway, then it's like, oh, wait, what? Aaron Judge and Bryce Harper are just like texting before the postseason. That's kind of interesting. And then Ken Rosenthal has a story with a little bit more background on this. And Harper saying that Judge is the opposing player that he talks to the most. And Judge kind of revealing that it started when Bryce Harper was a free agent and Aaron Judge was trying to get him to be a Yankee, which is funny in retrospect because clearly Aaron Judge coming off his, you know, still, I guess, not quite a rookie, but was not in the same level of, you know, he's the captain. He gets to kind of call the shots here as maybe he's closer to being now. We know that many Yankees fans feel like they should have been a little more aggressive to try to get Bryce Harper. We know they didn't. Bryce Harper ends up on the Phillies. They go on there. Now they've just been in separate leagues. there's really no reason. I'm sure they've played each other a few times and they've been in all-star games and whatnot. But again, we've never really heard about this as being this really meaningful, close relationship. And of course, it's spawned all kinds of other jokes whenever you see them in the dugout. And those are funny for their own reasons. But I am compelled by this combination of players because you have to think about, okay, right, who would Judge go out of his way to like want to be friends with that's not on the Yankees?
Dude,
and I'm fascinated by Bryce Harper being the guy. It makes a ton of sense. I'm not like surprised, but yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I think of the what was that show that LeBron had where famous people got haircuts?
Oh, The Shop. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's still on.
People of a certain stature can really only understand people of a similar stature. The number of human beings on the planet who can even remotely understand what it's like to be Aaron Judge, it's so small. And Bryce Harper is one of those people. And the same is true going the other way with Bryce and to Aaron. And so it does not shock me that these two have gotten close. You know, I mean, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. In that sense, I totally agree. I think that is, I have no notes on that observation. To me, what's so interesting is that I have to think it also helps that Harper was that so much before Aaron Judge and for so much longer. Aaron Judge is older than Bryce Harper by a few months.
Nuts.
Which kind of weird to think, right?
And it's weird because Judge was trying to recruit Harper during free agency after Judge's second big league season.
Right. But yes, Harper or Judge is older by a few months. But, you know, by the time Aaron Judge, like, think about it. Aaron Judge gets drafted out of, you know, Fresno State when Bryce Harper has just, you know, won Rookie of the Year, been an all-star. Like, when Aaron Judge is in college, Bryce Harper is the guy, right? He is the next face of baseball. And by the time Aaron Judge even gets to the big leagues, Bryce Harper has now won his first MVP. He has established himself as this great thing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so now that they've like almost caught up where Aaron Judge has now joined Bryce Harper atop the sport, it makes sense that like someone who was already doing it before him versus other guys that are superstars now that have become superstars since Judge has done it, it's probably less likely for them to necessarily relate. But I imagine the admiration and the respect for Harper because of the timing of kind of Judge's age and when he kind of came up, because Judge relatively came up late. You know, he was a little bit older when he got to the big leagues. I have to think that helps it as well.
The last thing about this that compels me is the difference in reputation that these two have behind the scenes in the clubhouse. And this is not to critique Bryce. I want to be very clear about that. But when we talk about legitimate difference-making presences behind the scenes in the clubhouse, it is a very short list. I was talking about this with a player yesterday. Bregman, Schwarber, Willy Adames, like those types of guys. Judge is that. Everybody you talk to, like Judge is that. With the way he treats people behind the scenes. Bryce is not that. Now, he's not, you know, a clubhouse cancer. He's not, you know, actively making things worse all the time, but he doesn't have that same kind of reputation. And so it is interesting to me to see if, like, by being around Aaron Judge, a player whose accomplishments Bryce Harper can respect at face, does Bryce enter this season now around the Phillies with a little bit more attention paid to how he carries himself in the room? And when you see Schwarber Harper talking to Judge, it's funny to me because in my mind, I'm like, what Judge means to the Yankees operation is like equal to Schwarber plus Harper. Like Schwarber and Harper are doing together what Aaron Judge does alone. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, are we reading way too much into all these things based on these minuscule interactions?
Sure.
Yes. But hey, this is way more fun than talking about spring training. So I am I am loving every second of it. All right. We're going to take a break. But before that, let me just remind you folks that fantasy baseball season is almost here. It is here. Go draft with your friends. Join a public league at Yahoo Fantasy. Sign up in the Yahoo Fantasy app or at YahooFantasy.com. MLB.com/baseball. We're going to take a break. When we return, Team Japan, you're not going to believe it. They are advancing. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. That was Team USA. That was Pool B. We still have three whole pools to talk about. So let's put on our swim trunks and our floaties and dive in to Pool C. This is the pool happening over in Japan at the Tokyo Dome. A Tokyo Dome that you can eat as an ice cream sandwich. I'm sure some people saw this. The replica Tokyo Dome as ice cream. It brings me no joy to report that I heard from someone on the ground that while the Tokyo Dome ice cream sandwich looks nice, it did not taste good. But we move forward. And you know who else is moving forward? Japan and Korea. A game of epic proportions and bizarroness this morning, early on Monday, between Australia and Korea, determining who would move on from Pool C. There were a million tiebreaker dynamics going on. I don't want to get lost in those weeds. The upshot is, if Korea won by five or more, they would advance, unless the score got high enough, over eight runs scored for them, over three runs for Korea, then Taiwan would advance. And this game, dude, went to the top of the ninth as beautifully so much timed as it could have.
So much could have still happened, like, by the time we got to the end of this game. And honestly, there's part of me that wants to, like, try to go back and explain how nuts it was. I think this is one of the most all-time you-had-to-be-there situations. not just like you had to be in the stadium, but you really had to be awake and, like, prepared for all these goofy scenarios to happen. But the point is, towards the end of this game, even though it looked like Korea was going to win likely, all the different scenarios were still in play for Taiwan to advance in a tiebreaker, for Australia to advance in a tiebreaker, for Korea to advance in a tiebreaker. Ultimately, we did get the best ending where it looked like Korea won and earned it and they advanced, and that is what happened. It is an incredibly disappointing outcome for Australia, which we can say goodbye to them now because, you know, we talked on Friday and they had started 2-0 and we looked ahead and we said, okay, they're off to a really good start. Can they beat Korea? Not only do they, well, we know what happened this morning. They put up a fight against Japan in a way that we were not expecting whatsoever. And we'll get to Japan here in a second. But, I mean, it's brutal. It's a brutal, brutal way to go out for Australia. And I feel terrible for them. But they didn't do quite enough. Like, you can laugh at the stupid tiebreakers all you want. And I think that that's valid. There's reasons that these stupid tiebreakers are in place. Like, why isn't it just regular run differential that has to do with some of these teams aren't playing all the actual innings because of the mercy rule. And there's just all this stuff going on there. So, does it feel a little unfair? Kind of. Does it feel like Korea earned it? Yeah. Like, I think Korea, to me.
They lost to Korea. Like, I know it's a three-way tiebreaker that Taiwan is involved in, but, like, really the way that this panned out with the two teams playing in the last game, it did feel like winner moves on, even though that wasn't necessarily the case. And remember, like, Korea won. I think in this game, Korea just outplayed Australia across the board. They were more physical. They were more poised. They pitched better. The amount of at-bats that Australia just, like, on the mound was non-competitive and just, like, non-competitive walks and balls. Like, to me, Korea was the better team. They played better, and they won by enough by the skin of their teeth to move on.
Yeah, and the other thing I would point out in terms of just in favor of Korea earning this, one of the games of the tournament, the extra inning game against Taiwan, they lost that game, but what a fight, right? What an effort. And, like, that was a game. That's the only reason we were even in this situation is because Taiwan managed to, you know, win a second game in that epic clash with Korea. But ultimately, Korea having beat, you know, Czechia by a lot and also put up a fight against Japan too, right? Like, Korea was also competitive in that game as well. So, this is a really encouraging showing for them, considering they had not made it out of the group stage in each of the last three WBCs after finishing in the top three or four, right, in the first couple editions. So this is, you know, as for their chances in the next round, we'll get to that when we get to that. But I do think that this is a really impressive showing and a necessary and important showing for Korea, for Korean baseball in general.
The one guy on Korea that I really want to focus on is Hyun Min Ahn. This is the 21-year-old who won MVP of the league last year, I believe. He was hitting fourth for them. He's the one who had the sac fly in the top of the ninth to put them ahead. I think he either homered or doubled off the wall in this game. The way he moves in the box is as physical and as dynamic as I can really remember a Korean player looking. Like, even like the guys that they've sent over in recent years, whether it's Jung-Hoo Lee or Ha-Sung Kim or Hi-Sung Kim, like, they're more twitchy and like whippy with their swing. They're not just putting as much juice. They're not using as much force. There's not as much rotational violence in their swing. Dude, Hyun Min Ahn, like at 21, swinging the stick the way he swung it, like that is a player I'm really interested in and excited about, like hopefully coming over to the States one day.
Yeah, and Do Young Kim. I mean, both of those guys are just the kinds of athletes that it jumps off the screen. It's cool though, because like Jung-Hoo Lee had some real moments, you know, in these last few games.
The catch
and Ha-Sung Kim was I believe got injured stealing a base against Taiwan, so he was not even in the lineup in this game today against Australia. The Dodgers second baseman Ha-Sung Kim. So that's a big piece to not have, you know, for Team Korea to not have a big leaguer in there. But Jung-Hoo Lee with that big catch, he's had some big hits. Very cool to see. And yeah, I'm excited to keep watching this lineup, because while I am very skeptical that their group of pitching can, you know, push them much farther in this tournament, I do think that this is a group of hitters I'm excited to watch for at least one more game.
Did you see the photo of Yamamoto making fun of Ha-Sung Kim?
No, I did not.
Where they're like coming out for like warmups, and Yamamoto, this is before their game, is holding up a 4 and a 5 like this because Kim was batting ninth. And he was like holding it up and like showing it to Kim.
I was a little perplexed like why he was batting ninth, but it kind of worked, I guess. I think he homered batting ninth. So anyway, good job for Korea. Brutal for Australia for a million reasons, and Taiwan again for that reason, to even like to fight back and win the game against Korea, and then for this game to unfold in a way that you actually had a chance towards the end, like that really hurts. But I am glad that they were able to show some fight. I think that the memory of that win against Korea will still sustain, you know, yes, for Taiwanese baseball, and that they definitely have. But definitely a disappointing result there. Okay, that's a lot about the teams that are not Japan, Jake Mintz.
Wait, oh, yeah. Do we need, before we go,
anything else? Yeah.
I need to salute and give a kudos and a cheers to the fan, the gentleman that brought the frickin' graph to the game. This deserves so much love, appreciation, and time. Because of all of the wonky scenarios that went on in this game, it was like, how many runs does one team score? Does the other team score? What does that outcome mean? And a fan just legitimately brought a graph with all the possible outcomes to the game, to the point that the broadcast just kept cutting to this guy to elucidate what was going to happen. Now, should Fox probably have had like a graphic ready to go so they didn't have to cut to the guy in the stands? Yeah, probably. But this was amazing, just how often he was on TV and the amount of time it probably took to put that thing together in a relatively short period of time, too. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Couldn't have made this 3 weeks ago.
Like, how did you? This is less than 24 hours that they had. Yeah, pretty close. Whatever. It was 2 days max that they had to put this together. And yeah, I'm just the quality of it, too. This is not like hand drawn and you filled it in. Like, this was professionally made. And the fact that they did keep showing it speaks to how important it was and also kind of embarrassing for Fox.
We should hit up our friend who works for the Hall of Fame, whose job it is to get the artifacts from games to put in the hall, like when Mookie goes 8 for 8, he gets his cleats. This board should be in the Hall of Fame for like an international baseball exhibit.
I agree. Now, I'm also curious. Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of questions involving it's like the process behind putting that together, but
it was unbelievable.
True WBC hero. Okay, let's talk about Japan. For once, we're really not going to talk that much about Otani. He did homer again, so good for him. They do have one more game against Czechia, which will essentially just be a friendly exhibition. However, there is one thing that we do need to talk about with Japan, and that is Masataki Yoshida.
Oh my God.
This dude is on some kind of heater.
Back.
I know we're talking about three games. He had a homer against Korea, and he had a home run, the go-ahead home run when they were losing late in the game against Australia, that was absolutely pummeled. And Yoshida, the thing that I really want to just hit at with him, because now you're getting all these epic shots of him and whatever, there is nobody shaped like this person that plays baseball. When they show him, when you see the side angle, there's like this shot that the WBC account tweeted out of him. His legs.
The pants.
He must have the most custom pants ever, like baseball pants. There is nobody else that looks like Masataki Yoshida. And I remember thinking this when he first came over, but there's something about the Japan uniforms and the way that they're tailored that I cannot think of it. And I know his nickname is Macho Man. That is appropriate. He does not look like a baseball player. He looks like a bodybuilder. And yet you see him move in the box, and it's just beautiful. It is beautiful baseball art to watch him operate. And I'm so glad he's having this moment. And Alex Cora was asked about this in spring training, and he's like, yeah, I don't know why people are surprised. And I do think that like he's become this punchline for the Red Sox. And a lot of that has at times he been disappointing in terms of what he's provided because of how limited he's been defensively and occasionally against lefties. Yes, but he has hit. This is not a guy with an 80 OPS plus that is some albatross of a contract. It is all contextual because the rest of the roster makes zero sense around him. And obviously because of his defense, you know, he's limited there, but he's pointed out he's generally hit. And it's just so cool to see him do this. He did it in the last WBC before he was even in the big leagues. And now I'm just so excited to see where he can fit in for the Red Sox because just man, oh man, what a fun, interesting, unique hitter.
Two things with him. One, he looks like a ripped Oompa Loompa with bat speed. Like baseball players don't look like that. It's really an incredible build. And the second thing with him in the context of his last couple seasons, he has not had this type of whip and like athleticism that he has showed in the box during this WBC. And part of that has to be injury related. He was pretty good, if I remember correctly, in the playoffs last year. But when I think back to his at-bats, he wasn't driving the ball. Like, did he have an extra base hit in those three games? I don't know. It was a lot of like, just touch it and hit a single over the shortstop's head and move forward. He is hitting the ball with authority in this WBC.
That is the difference. That is the difference. He had four hits. He had a hit in all three of those games, but they were all singles. But yeah, he was really good in September. Injuries, you know, killed his numbers and obviously availability and how much they wanted to use him before then. But again, it's still like hard to see where exactly he fits in on the Red Sox. But right now, he's one of the most important players in the tournament because Kensuke Kondo, who's been hitting second, and you know, we hyped up with Yuri because he's been one of the best players in Japan for the last few years, has not done anything. And again, I know we're talking about a small sample, but they've needed Yoshida to come through. And the MLB guys have shown up, man. I mean, he's been unbelievable. Yep. Suzuki hits two homers the other day, obviously Otani. So he's going to remain super important for the rest of this tournament for them. And it's cool to see him kind of have this moment and people realize like, wait a minute, this guy doesn't suck. He's just a really weird player and needs to be unleashed in the right circumstances.
Jordan, the whole tournament is small sample size. So, you know, there you go. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll throw these other two pools into turbo mode so that we can let you get on with your day. And welcome back to the End of Baseball Barbacast. We've yet to touch on Pool D or Pool A, Pool D and Pool A. We'll begin with Pool D and we'll go fast and do turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
The Dominican Republic and Venezuela are the two big dogs in Pool D in Miami. They have yet to play each other. They are both, as of this recording, undefeated. They will likely remain undefeated until they do play each other, which I believe is on Wednesday. Whoever wins that game between DR and Venezuela will win the pool, and they will face Korea in the quarterfinals. And whoever finishes second in the pool will face Japan. And that will be the stakes. Those will be the stakes for that matchup. Elsewhere in this pool, we did have some really entertaining stuff. The Junior Caminero laser beam for the DR against Nicaragua in their first game, in a game that was closer than anybody expected. DR ends up pulling away. We have the Ozzie Albies walk-off home run down 2-3-run shot against Nicaragua. That was the first ever walk-off home run in WBC history. I'm glad that it got the broadcast call it deserved. Anything else from this pool that you want to spend some time on?
Feel for Nicaragua, man. They were, you know, they came into this pool chasing their first ever WBC victory. And, you know, with Dusty Baker at the helm. And that was so freaking close. That whole, the way that whole inning unfolded with the ball hitting off the base and just, I mean, credit to Ozzie, man. I mean, that's a really cool moment for him. I know he's been talking a lot of smack with his pal Ronald Acuna Jr. And, you know, Venezuela obviously beat Netherlands in the opening game, and there was no surprise there. But for Ozzie to have his moment, I thought was pretty cool. And then generally Venezuela, I mean, then the other thing just to mention about Venezuela is since Luis Arraez does it again with the two-homer game against Israel. And Luis Arraez now has three career two-homer games. Two of them are in the WBC, and the other one was also in Lone Depot Park in 2023. Incredible. So just a very silly little stat there, but we love to see that. And otherwise, I mean, DR just, I mean, this lineup is exactly, it is fully delivering. It is living up to the hype in every sense. And Caminero, you mentioned against Nicaragua. I mean, the homer he hit against Netherlands yesterday was even more, I mean, not as impressive in terms of just like the piece of hitting because it was a terrible pitch and, you know, he did what he was supposed to. But man, oh man, Caminero is what Dude. What a, for him to emerge. And I just tweeted about this yesterday. He had this interview last year, midseason, where he was like, Albert Pujols, please put me on the team. I'll just be the water boy. And it's funny because at the time, I went back and looked. That interview was like at the end of May. And Caminero really didn't heat up until later. Like, I imagine at that point, he said it in that interview with Yansen Pujols, who, of course, is one of the main, you know, Dominican journalists that has all kinds of interviews with these players. And Caminero said, he's like, look at the guys in the team. Like, I don't know if I'm going to make this team. And at that point, you can understand why he was thinking that. And then to hit, I think, 35 homers from that point forward and to be in the middle of this lineup. And to be clearly one of the most impactful hitters, what he did in the exhibitions in Santo Domingo, and just oh my God, what a talent, what a freaking talent! So Caminero, man, I'm just having fun watching him.
Technically, I think Israel and the Netherlands are both still able to advance. Israel would need to beat the Dominican Republic this afternoon. I'll take the under on that. Israel beating Nicaragua yesterday does mean that they are likely to secure the fourth spot in the group and not have to requalify, which is what happened last time. I do think it is funny that there's this like budding Israel-Nicaragua baseball rivalry because they both end up in Miami every year playing to not have to requalify. Very delightful.
Yeah, we will see if, because they had that close game in 2023. We will see if that happens again in the next edition. But yeah, Netherlands, otherwise at this point, we're just kind of building up to that DR Venezuela game, which is the grand finale of pool play on Wednesday night. And I have not been this excited for a baseball game in a very, very, very long time. So We will get there when we get there. But otherwise, we'll be talking plenty more about those two teams moving forward. So we can go to Pool A and wrap things up. Pool A, of course, was the pool we had the least feeling about how it was going to go. And I think that has generally unfolded as not expected, I guess, with the main headlines being Cuba being 2-0 along with Puerto Rico. Colombia, who I kind of had a good feeling about, they have not looked good. They've already been eliminated. Julio Teran got scratched like 5 minutes before their game, which was very unfortunate for them. But they have not really performed well. Puerto Rico shuts out Colombia. And then the Puerto Rico-Panama game, giving us, an hour or two after Ozzy Albies hits the first walk-off in WBC history, Daryl Hernandez gives us the second against Panama. Another absolute heartbreaker for Panama, who bounces back in very impressive fashion against Canada last night. We'll get to that in a second. But the Puerto Rico, I mean, Hernandez, like, what? Wow, right? And just the scenes there. It's everything you could possibly dream of, right? Like, as cool as the Ozzy walk-off home run was in kind of a weird mix crowd of probably mostly Nicaraguan fans, to be honest, at Lone Depot relative to, you know, Curaçao and whatnot. But to have a walk-off like this, in dude, Puerto Rico, in San Juan, was just unbelievable. And just all the scenes from it, everything just, oh, man.
The context of this, right, is like with the three best players on Puerto Rico's team not able to participate with the insurance kerfuffle, that sullied some of the excitement. And for this team to go out there and win like this, it is an all-time look at what it means to him moment, right? Well, tears. Also, like, you have Jose De Leon crying on the field as the crowd sings together, players and fans. It was amazing. It was beautiful.
Nolan Arenado, who, of course, you know, playing for Puerto Rico for the first time after playing for Team USA, he was just like, the interview with him afterwards, you could tell he was just like shook by the whole experience. You mentioned that context. It's even better because guess who's not playing if Francisco Lindor and Carlos Correa show up? Daryl Hernandez. Like, the only reason he's playing, he started the game at shortstop, ended up at third base. The only reason he's playing, I mean, he would be on the roster, I'm pretty sure.
He would not be starting at shortstop.
The A's, but he would certainly not be starting at shortstop. So for him to even be in that opportunity, to see the videos of Lindor, like, on FaceTime with Kike and responding like that. And I don't know if you saw Hernandez post on Instagram, like the reaction of Lindor, you know, freaking out about his home run. And he was just like, this is my idol, like, reacting like this. Like, this is unbelievable. So just the coolest thing. I mean, this is what it's all about. So huge win for Puerto Rico. They're 2-0.
This is why this, this is why this matters. Like, people tweeting like, oh, it's an exhibition tournament. Oh, like, it'll never matter if this doesn't happen. Like, you have a nation weeping together. Enjoy. Like, maybe it doesn't matter in some context, but the emotions, those are real and they matter to me. And they certainly matter to Puerto Rico. The last thing to touch on this pool was Canada's defensive disaster last night against Panama, during which Josh Naylor just straight up dropped the ball at first base. Canada losing that game puts them in a weird spot as the pool moves forward.
Yes, and Cuba, you know, I kind of throwaway line for our preview. I was like, are we underestimating Cuba again? Probably. I will just say that this is a good note to end this podcast on. I do feel like, and I'm sure I've said it too, but you just referenced like, oh, these people saying it's an exhibition. I think we're kind of at the point where we're now approaching the Steph Curry wasn't a good shooter meme. Like, that's kind of what we're at. For those unfamiliar with one of the great Twitter memes, this is from @KillAcow. Quote, there's always someone on Twitter arguing with no one, saying stuff like, but I was told Steph Curry wasn't a good shooter. I think that's kind of where we're at with the WBC. Like, if you're on there being like, but this is an exhibition, no one cares. Like, no, I don't know. I think it's the opposite. You're basically being like, but I was told that this was an exhibition. It's like, no, we get it. This is awesome. Okay. If you want to keep arguing against this, you're probably not listening to this podcast. You probably don't really, we don't really care about you that much. So I don't think we need to go out of our way to make that point that this is not an exhibition anymore. But either way, what a weekend of baseball. It continues, and we will be back to see how pool play concludes. Definitely still much more to be decided with Team USA, with Team DR, with Venezuela. But we will leave it there. So thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Andrew Hart, CJ Brassel for producing. We'll be back later this week. Until then, enjoy the ball. Bye, everybody.